This is Fresh Air. If you missed The Grifters when it played in theaters, you might want to rent it this summer. It just came out on video. As New York Times film critic Vincent Canby said, it's a smashing variation on the sort of movie that people mean when they ask why Hollywood doesn't make movies the way they used to. The Grifters is about three con artists who con each other. It was adapted from a 1963 pulp novel by Jim Thompson. The movie stars Angelica Houston as Lily, John Cusack as her son Roy, and Annette Bening as Roy's girlfriend, Myra. Here are Cusack and Bening.
Roy, you're a short con operator, and a good one, I think. Don't talk to me like I'm another square.
You talk the lingo. What's your pitch?
The long end. Big con.
Nobody does that single out.
I was team 10 years with the best in the business. Cole Langley.
I've heard the name.
It was beautiful. And getting better all the time.
Is that right?
It is, Roy. It's where you should be. What do you bring in? $300-$400 a week? We use money like that for tips.
Wow.
And now, right now, it's the perfect time.
The Grifters was directed by Stephen Frears. He also made My Beautiful Laundrette, Prick Up Your Ears, and Dangerous Liaisons. Frears was invited to direct The Grifters by Martin Scorsese, who produced the film. But Frears, who is British, hadn't directed a movie in America before. He told Fresh Air producer Amy Sallet that he had a lot to learn before he could direct this uniquely American story about con artists and gamblers.
I knew nothing about America. I don't know anything about horse racing. I don't know what that world is like. I had to learn about it. I say, I knew what it was like from the movies, but in real life, I had to learn about it. But people take, that stuff you can learn. You know, you can, people will take you to places and show you how to do certain kinds of tricks and things like that. That's available. Of course, the emotion, the relationships between the characters, you know, that comes from somewhere else.
Well, what did you do to prepare? Did you get people to take you to the
restaurants? Oh, I mean, con men would come in and show me their tricks.
Really?
Yeah, they were rather nice people, and it was always very funny, and they'd show you how they cheated people.
So what were some of the things they showed you?
Oh, the magnets up sleeves and, you know, palming cards and three-card Monte, all that sort of stuff. And also that it's all on a very, very... you know, it's for $10. It's not for $100,000. That's big. That's sort of something else. This is just for $10.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the truth is, we're all suckers, and we haven't a hope. You know, I know I'm a sucker. You know, I can't live in. I couldn't live with those guys. They could take my money any day.
Did they?
How do I know? That's part of the joy. You never know that you've been done.
Since the characters in this film, they are con artists,
yeah.
And part of the con is that you can't let other people really read your face.
Yes, of course.
And you know, they're very tight-lipped, and they really can't reveal their true selves on the outside. So is it hard to get the actors to reveal their inner motivations to the audience since they're trying to hide it from the other characters in the film? Is it hard to direct a performance like that?
I think I do that instinctively. The last film I made, Dangerous Liaisons, that was quite a problem. That's to say, whenever anybody spoke, they were always lying, and eventually we found a way that you could actually see the dishonesty and the layers of deceit. It didn't so explicitly... It didn't present itself as a problem in the same way in this film. No, I mean, that's... somehow it was about the fact that you didn't know whether somebody was lying or not, and only afterwards did you discover, oh, I see, they weren't saying what they meant at all.
Dangerous Liaisons was your first major Hollywood studio production.
Yes.
Right? And before that, the films that you were known for over here were My Beautiful Laundrette and Prick Up Your Ears and Sammy and Rosie Get Laid.
That's right.
And all of those were about class and race and homosexuality.
Yes.
And they were set in these... rather netherworlds of London.
Yeah.
So you would seem to have been the least likely choice to direct this major studio production about the French aristocracy in the 18th century.
Yes, that's right.
How did you get that job?
Well, it took them a long time to come to me, though the writer, Christopher Hampton, who was also the producer, he said right from the beginning, the person you want is is Stephen Frears. And they said, no, 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 he makes those films, you know, about other subjects. But, of course, he was right, because really what I'm used to is working with very, very good writers. And Liaison was a wonderful script, and I knew Christopher very well, and I understood absolutely what he was writing about. So it wasn't difficult for me. I wasn't surprised, but I could see other people were.
Dangerous Liaisons, it's a period piece from the 18th century, and you could have gone the route of doing, you know, making it really opulent with large crowds and a lot of chateaus.
Yes, but that was what I didn't want to do.
Why didn't you want to do that?
Well, I mean, because I've seen films like that and they don't interest me. And what I always liked about the script was that it wasn't about that. It was just about these people and how they interacted and how they revolved around each other and fell in love with each other or whatever. And that the story was absolutely wonderful, and that if you did put in a lot of sort of French 18th century period detail, that that was somehow not very interesting. And I remember saying to the costume designer and to the set designer, both of whom were wonderfully talented men, I said, look, if people come out talking about the costumes, we've sort of failed. You know, it's the story which is so wonderful.
And you ended up using a lot of close-up shots on the
faces. Well, that's what you were talking about. That's because if you went in close, you saw that they were saying one thing and meaning another. Oh. It's simply, it's a quite practical problem. How do you show dishonesty, or how do you show that someone doesn't mean what they say? And there are several answers. There are several, you know, there's no limit to the number of ways you can do that. But in that film, what worked was going in and seeing their eyes.
My guest is film director Stephen Frears. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Stephen Frears is my guest. A few years ago, you directed Prick Up Your Ears, mm-hmm. and that was about the British playwright Joe Orton mm-hmm. and his homosexual relationship with Kenneth Halliwell. And Halliwell ended up bludgeoning Orton to death, and this all happened in the late 60s in London. And that was a project that you actually had first tried to do back in 1981, and it didn't happen, but you really persisted with it. What was it about his story that you really made you really want to produce that film?
Well, it's an extraordinary story, isn't it? Mm. I mean, I imagine there were all the way through it, there were themes that interested me, and it was a very, very good script. I mean, they don't float around. When you find one, you're really pleased. I mean, we didn't make it in the early 80s because, you know, the climate shifted slightly in the mid-80s, and we were able to, I think now you couldn't make it, but at that time we were good, and we were able to get the money, and we went back and did more work on the script. So it was sort of, it was opportune, and we couldn't find an actor the first time, and then in the meantime, Gary Oldman, who says that he did come to see me in 1980, but he was growing up a bit. So that when we saw him again in 1986, he was that much older and, you know, had filled out and become a man of the right age.
Did you just say now you couldn't make that film?
I doubt if you could make that film now.
Why is that?
Because the legislation in Britain has become more repressive. And I don't think you could, you know, it was quite an expensive film because we had to recreate an earlier period, and I don't think you could go to somebody and sort of honourably ask them to invest in the film now. It would seem to me that the forces lined up against it were too strong. I mean, there's legislation which, you know, although no one, perhaps you wouldn't get prosecuted, you'd always be nervous that you were going to be prosecuted.
What legislation?
Oh, there's a clause in some bill which makes it illegal to promote homosexuality. Well, I don't know what the words mean even, but, you know, someone might say, oh, this is promoting homosexuality, let's take them to court and cause havoc that way. So, you know, the whole climate is against that sort of work.
You studied law
yep.
at Trinity University?
Trinity College,
Trinity
Cambridge.
College. Mm. How did you end up working in film?
Well, it was very, very boring reading law. I mean, really dull. And while I was at Cambridge, I worked in the theatre a lot, and I thought that I wanted to work in the theatre for a living. And I got jobs in the theatres, and then I found it not... like, I wasn't as happy as I would have hoped. And then I met a film director who said, come and work on my film. So I went and worked on his film in complete bewilderment about what was going on. And then I made a film. And then what happens in life is you discover that people will employ you and actually, you know, pay you a wage to make a film. And so I learnt, as it were, as I went along. And then you one day think, oh, I see, I can actually make these films. Now perhaps I should think about what I make and why I photograph that and not that. And so it was a complete accident, really.
Uh-huh. Who was the film director?
Carol Rice.
And he wasn't he part of, in France, around this time in the 60s, there
in
was...
In Britain.
Well, in France, there was the New Wave,
yes.
You know, cinema,
yes,
the New Wave. Was there
saying.
A comparable thing
yes,
going on?
There was a, yes, absolutely. I mean, he and a man called Lindsay Anderson and Tony Richardson, they sort of changed the whole thing. And, you know, those sort of rather old-fashioned films about the British stiff upper lip and the middle classes stopped being made and they started making films about ordinary people and ordinary lives, ordinary social problems, working-class people. And television really picked up from them and started showing life in Britain as it really is. I mean, you know, ordinary life, ordinary, regular life. Not that sort of view, you know, as though life sort of came down from the Queen in some way. Not that sort of official tourist view of Britain. Just the real thing.
Did you want to work in film?
Well, when I came down from university, I wanted to work for the BBC. Around the time, at the end of the 50s, the beginning of the 60s, it suddenly became a place where there were large numbers of young people who sort of had nowhere to go, very, very highly educated, intelligent people who wanted to find some means of expression, and the BBC became where they went to. And fellows at university when I was there, they were all getting jobs in the BBC. So the brightest people in the country went to this institution. And they sort of took it over. A few years later, it was the Beatles and, you know, things like that. But at that time, the BBC became, largely when it was run by Graham Greene's brother, it became a place where the very, very bright, energetic, lively people were to be found. And it was the most wonderful place where you were trained to sort of question the system and trained to show life as it really was and trained to be sceptical about official versions of things. It was a wonderful place. And I worked with Tom Stoppard and people like that, Alan Bennett, a lot. They were where they were writing for because you couldn't get into films. Films was a sort of closed world. So young people, people of my age, just took this medium over.
You did make Gumshoe. How did that come about? But then you didn't make another film.
Well, I made that because it's a very, very good script that a friend of mine wrote, and we got Albert to be in it. So Albert Finney to be in it. So it was, you know, we got given the money, and it's. But I didn't really know what I was doing. Then I went into television. And what I was really doing, although I didn't know this at the time, was finding a place where I could learn my job.
And then My Beautiful Laundrette, which was your next film, actually started out as a TV show, and you...
Well, when I was sent the script of My Beautiful Laundrette, I said, this is very, very good. This is like these television films we've been making, so we shouldn't try to kid ourselves that this is for the cinema. So it went into the cinema by popular demand. I mean, it was a wonderful experience. I mean, you know, we weren't thinking, oh, this really would be good if it was in the cinema. It was suddenly started being shown in New York and in Paris, and it was a complete eye opener to us. We were all astonished.
For that film, also, you were known for presenting homosexuality in a very humanizing kind of way, because
yes.
I think it was one of the first films that had a homosexual relationship in it, but it really wasn't about homosexuality.
Well, it wasn't. It didn't show them to be sort of that it was a problem in any way.
It just came out very naturally.
Yes, yes.
Did you and Hanif Qureshi, who wrote the screenplay, did you discuss how you wanted to present that relationship?
I don't think I ever had a conversation with him. It just evolved naturally. I mean, it was the homosexuality was in the script, And I remember, because it was a radical film, I remember being delighted that you had to be radical on all levels, which included relationships and sexual relationships. And then I discovered afterwards that I'd shot it like a sort of high school picture, and you know, that it was really my memory of American teen films from the '50s, sort of people necking in open cars and things like that, and boys and girls in the American films. And in fact, without thinking about it, I'd subverted it and made it a sort of parody of that. But it was certainly true that it somehow was acceptable, and I always liked it that it didn't treat homosexuality as if it was some terrible disease.
Stephen Frears spoke with Fresh Air producer Amy Sallet. Frears' latest movie, The Grifters, is now out on video. This is Fresh Air.